Well, good morning. Good to see you here today. Got a lot of people gone, but that's all right. And I'm glad to be back. I did receive a picture here today. John talks a lot about fishing, but Debbie actually comes through. Every year, she's got the biggest bass picture. You guys see it? This is... Now, this one isn't quite six. She's a little disappointed because her other picture is one that's six, what was it? 6'10". 6'10". Out of the local lakes around here, by the way. You don't have to go way up north. You don't have to go way down to south to catch fish like this. That's a hog. I call it a pig or a toad. That's a toad. All right. Anyways, big bass, very nice. I don't know, I might just keep this. No, I won't. I'll give it back. I promise. All right. Well, last week, through a sort of a wild, crazy night emergency, we weren't here. And I really just shocked, and I thank God for the gifts that he's given this church. I mean, the next day, I wanted to listen to the Sunday school lesson. And John had it right up, ready to go, and I just thank God for him, and always that thing I can listen to, and it's clear. Yes?
Donovan did the entire deal last week.
Whoa. Look at the gifts he gets. I'm serious. I always tell everybody that John's the best... this little tiny church has the best sound man in the state, and I think maybe the country, just think of that. And then I was thinking of Pastor Obadi. If somebody told me on a Sunday morning, oh, by the way, you got to teach Sunday school, I would have literally freaked. I would have had a meltdown anxiety attack, because that's just not who I am. I could not do that. But for him to put something together on Sunday morning, come and teach, and I listened to it, and it was really a wonderful message. I just thank God for those gifts. And then yes.
Grace.
Oh, I know. And then Dorothy couldn't be there. And then Grace played the prelude. And I heard she did a wonderful job on the prelude. And thank you for that. And then I listened to Pastor Sturz's message. And oh, was I squirming in my chair on that one. Don't do things for men to see. Anyways, I just thank God. That was just free. I just thank God so much for the gifts that he's given this church, this little church in the country. So, anyways, let's start right in. Let's turn to John chapter 5. John chapter 5. We're going to be looking at the second part of this question, do you want to be made well? We're going to be looking at to be made well today. But let's just read John chapter 5, 5 through 11. 5 through 11. It says, now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he already had been in that condition a long time, he said to him, do you want to be made well? The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred, but while I am coming, another steps down before me. And here Jesus said, basically, look at me. Jesus said to him, rise, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, it is a Sabbath, it is not lawful for you to carry your bed. He answered them, he who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk. We're going to look at that second part. Last time we got together, we looked at that first part, do you want...
You said you were going to address, you're skipping a verse 4, too.
Oh, I am. When we talk about Jesus alone, we're going to talk about verse 4. Oh, we're going to definitely go through that probably a couple of weeks. We got somebody, Scott Willicott, coming in a couple of weeks. But yeah, end of the month, we will definitely talk about that. And so, do you want? We saw that do is to take action. You is personal. It's not about the other guy. We're not to sit here and go, look at everybody else, but he's directing this to you. And do you want, that's volitional, it's absolute determination, no matter the cost, I'm ready to do this, I want to be made well. And so before we get into that second part of the question, as we go through this, I'm going to use my personal example that I'm working on now. And I told you before it was procrastination. And I've shared a couple of the ones I've already been through, and that's alcohol and scheming and manipulation. And I'm going to use some of those just as examples. But I hope no one thinks I'm here teaching a series on procrastination. In a sense, what I'm saying is that just because you don't have procrastination, you have other areas, I'm sure, that you need to work on. I think that's why in verse 5 here, before we see that he gives examples of the people that are at the pool, there was some blind and lame and paralyzed and so forth. But here he says, now a certain man was there who had an infirmity. He didn't specifically name what it was. He didn't say, there was a man here who had Brown Secord syndrome. It's a rare neurological condition characterized by a lesion in the spinal cord which results in weakness or paralysis on one side of the body and loss of sensation on the opposite side. He didn't specifically name what this man had, and I think it was for a reason. I think it was for a reason that basically he's talking about all infirmities here. All infirmities. So just because you don't have the infirmity of procrastination, and I know there are some in this room that don't. I know my wife does not. My wife attacks stuff, and I appreciate that. I mean, we go out and we buy all kinds of stuff, undervalued stuff, and I sell. That's what I do for a living. Anyways, when we get back, we got it lined up a lot of times in the hallway. And in there, there could be an expensive but nasty vacuum with dog hair and just goo on it. And, you know, golf clubs that are all dirty and so forth. And there could be the easy thing like the football helmet just needs some labels and stuff. I mean, it's lined up. I think, Joe, you came there once and you looked and it was just, all the stuff was lined up. And I know what I'd do if I was in charge of cleaning that. I would order it from the easiest to the hardest. And I would start with the easiest. I'd start with like the football helmet. And then the vacuum cleaner would probably maybe end up outside on the patio around the corner, sort of out of sight. And that's how I would probably have handled that. But she just attacks it. Whatever is first, if it's the vacuum that's in the first in line, she just grab it and do it. I mean, she just, by the time I even sit down and start inventorying some of the stuff, I hear the water running and everything going. So, I mean, there are people that don't have that infirmity. I know Pastor Robati, he's not here today. He doesn't have it. One day it was like 95 or 6. Remember those really hot days that we had? Really hot days. About half the day or more, I heard over there, ring, ring, ring. He had the chainsaw going all day during the heat of the day. That Wednesday night, I saw him over at Pastor's house for our Wednesday night service, and I asked Pastor Robati, I said, man, wasn't it hot out there? Wasn't it hot out there? I mean, all day chainsawing? And he goes, it's got to get done. It's got to get done. I like that. Get her done. And so, but there are people that don't have those things. But there are other areas that they do have. And don't just think because, and the reason I use it as an example, that's the only thing I know. I can't use another example, maybe anxiety and frustration or something, which I don't tend to have a problem with too much. I have to use the one that's in my life, but I'm just using them as an example. So Dorothy came up with an idea, and I know I must be getting better because I actually listened to her. I mean, seriously, yay! I actually listened to her. I didn't go, you don't know what you're talking about, or, you know, I'll handle this, or whatever. I actually listened to her. She says, why don't you just take, I read this book, Pastor Body gave me Respectable Sins, Confronting the Sins We Tolerate. And she said, why don't you just take the list that he gave you and once a Sunday just put one up. And just so you know, I didn't pick on anyone here that might have this. Well, we call it disorders, but the infirmity, whatever. I just picked the first one on the list. And that was anxiety and frustration. So every week we're going to have a new one revolving around. Because when it says here, there had a man with an infirmity, I think Jesus did that for, the Spirit did that for a particular reason, because it wasn't a particular infirmity, and none of us are exempt. Now, okay, let's get into the second part of this question. Do you want to be made well? To be made. And let me just start with what he did not say. What he did not say to this man when he saw him and he knew he had been in infirmity for a long time, he did not say to him, snap out of it. All right? You cannot snap out of a long-term pattern. We maybe call it disorder. Or a habit or an addiction. We have a lot of names for these things, but they're all the same. It's this infirmity. We can't just snap out of it. It's part of us. We looked at that before. It's who you are. And you don't just snap out of it. He didn't say, you better do something about it. You got yourself into this mess. You better get yourself out of this mess. Because he had no ability or strength to do that. He didn't say, you better get your act together. He didn't say, you just have to try harder. He didn't even say, you really need to see a professional. Now, I'm just going to give a little exemption here. When I'm talking about these things, I'm talking about sinful and moral patterns that we've built into our lives. I'm not talking something that has a physiological or genetic a background to it. And so I want to make that clear that we're talking here about sinful and moral maladies or infirmities. I could give a whole series on why in this dispensation that God is talking to us about our spiritual and moral things and not about physical or something that has a physiological basis. So just so you know that. I'm not saying we shouldn't see a professional when we have a physiological or genetic or something disorder going on in our lives. But these are spiritual and moral questions we're talking about. He's not asking us to see a professional. I'm just going to read really quick. He has given us, in 1 Peter, he has given us, in chapter 1, verse 3, I'll just read it, as his divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us by glory and virtue, by which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. He has given us all resources that we, through him and through the knowledge of Christ, might be partakers of his divine nature. And so that's what we're talking about here. So this is what he did not say. Let's see what he did say. He says, do you want to be made? To be made. I'm going to give a two-word definition. To be made. And this is really the heart of our lesson. If you were going to get anything out of this, this is the one thing that I want you to get out. If you're the kind that likes to write on the back of your hand, write it on the back of your hand, whatever. Don't forget this. It's called passive obedience. To be made, I'm going to do a description or definition as passive obedience. Now, that sort of sounds like an oxymoron, passive obedience. What does that mean? Well, passive, this word made here, is in the passive voice of the verb. It's a work accomplished in you by another. It's a work accomplished in you by another. That's the passive part. It's the same word, exact word we see in like John 3. All things were made through him. Were made. He took all the elements and all that was created. And he designed and made it, and they were perfectly passive and obedient in his hands, and he made it into exactly what he wanted to make them into. It was, these elements were literally passive in his hand and obedient to whatever he wanted. It's a work accomplished in you by another. And we're going to, in coming to Jake's point, when we talk about Jesus alone, we're going to talk about, well, didn't he have the angel here to help him? But we'll speak about that. But Jesus alone, it's a work accomplished in you by another. And it's completely on the terms and plans of someone else. It's completely on the terms. It's not on your terms. It's not on your plans. It's completely on the terms of the plans of someone else. So when Jesus asked him, do you want to be made well? It isn't that he's asking that man to come up with his own plan and his own power. But it's completely on his, Jesus, plans and on his terms. We want to just turn really quick to Hebrews chapter 12, and we've already looked at this once. Hebrews chapter 12. Verse 1 says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, it says, lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. That's the infirmities we're talking about here, which so easily ensnare us. And let us run with endurance. And here's what I want to emphasize. The race that is set before you. The race that is set before you. That's the passive part. The race that is set before us, the course that is set before us, is set before us by someone else. No athlete ever sets up his own course. He runs a course that's set up for him. Now, I'm sort of a strange bird. I could sit for 4 hours. No, more than that. I could sit for 8 hours for 4 days in a row watching a golf tournament like the Masters. Now, I don't think I'm the only one that could do that. I think there's someone here that also might enjoy that. But I could sit and watch that golf tournament for 4 days. I don't, just so you know, I don't. But I could. Now, when those golfers come, they have nothing to do with setting up the course. All of it is set up for them. The total yardage, where they're going to tee off from, the width of the fairways, the length of the rough, what kind of grass is on the rough, the speed of the greens, the pin placements, everything is set up for them. It's on the terms of the tournament pros that set it up. They go and they play the course that is set up before them. It's in a sense, they're obedient, but in a sense, they're passive. The course is set up for them. But sometimes in our enthusiasm, we tend to run ahead of him and develop our own treatment plan. I have this happen to me all the time. I said before, I spent 50 years in this infirmity of procrastination. And I don't know how many Sunday nights I came home and sort of looked through back in my week. And I'm going, Monday, I'm going to start. And I lay out my own plan. I lay it all out. And I say, okay, I'm going to get up at 5 o'clock and I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. And I'm going to stay up till 10 o'clock working. I mean, I lay it all out of what I'm going to do. Well, that's not being passive. That's not letting it on someone else's terms. And what invariably happens is that there is no divine power in that plan. And by Monday, usually around 10 o'clock in the morning, it all sort of fizzles away. It just does every single time. I remember one time I tried to make up my own plan. I was, you know, sometimes I get online, I have to for my work, and there's a Yahoo thing, and Mark Cuban, it says, has the greatest, the greatest key to success. I go, I'm going to listen to that. I'm just looking at that. And I looked at his greatest plan of success was to get up early in the morning and do your hardest thing first. So you don't spend energy and so forth and being all anxious and everything about having to do it later on. He says, and that's what someone that worked through procrastination called eat that frog. Has anyone heard that, eat that frog? I think it was originally coined by Mark Twain. And Mark Twain says, this is what you should do. Get up every single morning. First thing you do in the morning is eat a live frog. That's the first thing you do. And he said, nothing else through the day will be very bad after that. You eat the frog first thing in the morning, and everything will look much rosier the rest of the day. And so in this area of procrastination, basically, they said, you get up and you do your hardest thing first. And then that's done. You don't have the anxiety of having to think about doing it later, and you'd be more productive. So I decided I was going to do that. And so I had a phone call I had to make, I knew, the next day. It's one I didn't want to make. I know there's going to be some tension there and all that stuff, you know. And I think I had to, I wasn't looking forward to it. So I decided I was going to follow Mark Cuban's plan there. I mean, I got up in the, and so I did get up that morning, and I did make that phone call. And in a way, I'm glad I did. But the problem was, I worried about it so much the night before. All night long, I tossed and turned. I didn't sleep the entire night thinking I had to get up first thing in the morning and make that phone call. After that phone call, I was so exhausted. The whole day was just blah. It just didn't work out. So anyways, we have a tendency to run ahead of them. One more really quick illustration. A couple Sundays ago, me and Zach and Dorothy and Ethan and Nora went out golfing. And just on that little par 3 course and Stacy. And Dorothy gave Nora the job of being the flag tender. And she, you know, she's the one that got the flag and took it out and until we putted and then put it back in. She was all excited about this job. And when you give that girl a job, I'll tell you, she's on it. I mean, she's on it. And so it was like the third hole, and it was like 165-yard par 3, and obviously we weren't that good because actually no one hit the green. And so, I was up on the left, Zach was over here, and Ethan was like 50 yards back. So anyways, we get up to our ball to approach, you know, into the green, but Nora, she was so excited about her new job, she ran ahead of us, 50 yards ahead, grabbed the flag and just stood there like this with the flag. And we're going, Nora, in about a couple minutes, you're going to have like three little white missiles being shot at you. You can't do that. You've got to come back. And she, you know, we felt really bad because she was so excited. But she ran ahead of us, and she set her own, in a sense, course. And we had to have her come back. And I sort of felt bad. But the passive part is that it's going to be, we're going to be made well and acted upon by someone else, and it's on completely on the terms and the plans of someone else. The obedience part is that we are obedient to the plan then that is laid out before us. We are obedient to the plan that is laid out before us. Let's just look at really quick John 5, 8 through 9. I mean, this is just a really quick course, but Jesus set it up for him. Jesus said to him, he totally ignored the man's excuse that I have no man to bring me to these impotent waters, in which they were, they're completely impotent. But anyways, we'll talk about that later. But in verse 8, Jesus said to him, rise, take up your bed, which was a big deal, by the way. It was the Sabbath. That was a big deal. And walk. He just laid out that course. Rise, take up your bed, and walk. And immediately, the man was made well. What did he do? He rose, he took up his bed, and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him, and I'm sure he knew he was going to get an earful, who was cured, "It is a Sabbath, it is not lawful for you to carry your bed." And he answered them, "He who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk." And he did it. That's passive obedience. Now, passive obedience is not a foreign concept. We actually practice it all the time. Passive obedience is practiced all the time. Let's just take a trip to the ER. All right? Take a trip to the ER. So I got our little medical picture up there. When you finally, especially men, when you finally come to the point of saying, "I want to be made well," even in the physical aspect, there's a reason they have commercials on men wear the gown, because we're always fighting it. "Oh, I don't have to go. Oh, nothing's wrong with me. No. I mean, but when you finally come to the point where I want to be made well, I remember the two heart attacks that I had. I put them off and put them off. And I mean, I remember one down in the basement holding onto the pole, and it hurt so bad, but then it went away. Okay, I'm okay. And it got to a point, finally I said, "I want to be made well." And I made Zach drive me all the way back here because I only wanted her to bring me to the hospital. I didn't want anyone else to bring me to the hospital but her. So we went all the way back here, and we drove down to the hospital. I finally came to the point I wanted to be made well in that physical sense. And so when we get to the ER, I don't make my own plans. I just submit to whatever they say, but I'm obedient to it. The first thing when you came in, there's always the first thing you must do before anything will happen. Anything will happen. Where's your insurance card, right? I mean, that's the first thing they ask. You could go in and go, "My husband's dying of a heart attack." And they'll go, yeah, aren't we all? Where's your insurance card? You know, I mean, so you're obedient. You go through the plan. You give them your insurance card. And it's amazing. Once they got your insurance card, they know they're going to get paid, how fast they move. And once that is taken care of, but you're obedient. You go through the plan. She doesn't just say to you, "Oh, go find a room." Can you imagine wandering around the hospital? What room am I supposed to go in? I don't know. I mean, you probably end up in the janitor's closet or something. No, she directs you to a specific room, and you're obedient. And when you get in that room, they don't just tell you, "Oh, here's equipment. Just go at it," you know. I mean, you don't make up your own plan when you go in the room. Can you imagine that? They tell me, just go at it. Here's the equipment. You know, you got one lifeline. I know who I'd be calling. I'd be calling John. I go, "John, get over here. This equipment is driving me crazy, this technology stuff. I can't figure it out." No, of course, the doctor comes in, and he tells you exactly what to do. Take off your shirt. Do this. Put out your arm. Do this. Do that. Or as Gary and me were talking about it, once in a while, you know, bend over. This might be a little uncomfortable. This might hurt. And you do exactly what they say. Even if it might be uncomfortable, you do exactly what they say. It's a passive obedience. And they hook you up and do all this kind of stuff. And they come back with a plan. They go, "Man, I remember the second time I went in, finally went in, the guy comes back and goes, "Man, you know, your first time your enzymes were here, but now they're way up here." He says, "We're calling an ambulance." And right before he left, he says, "Good luck." I remember saying, "Good luck." And I'm going, "Well, thanks. That really gives me encouragement." But they do the plan. So they rush me down and they tell me to get in this bed and do this. I remember the first time I had Dr. March. She was a female doctor, extremely competent. And went in and she just put out your arm and she goes, "We're going to go through your wrist." And I didn't go, "I don't think that's a good idea. I think I'd rather go through my groin. That's where sometimes they go through that instead of the wrist." No, whatever you say. I just laid back and was totally obedient to whatever they said. That's passive obedience. Passive obedience. That's where we have our picture. You go to the surgery and you don't make your own plan. When you finally get to the point, "I want to be made well," And when it comes to our spiritual life, we need to do the same thing. The same thing. In other parts of life, we do. We go to school. We don't give ourselves our own homework. We don't decide what we're going to learn that day. We don't decide what textbooks we're going to... No, it's all laid out for you, the course that is laid out for you. And then you are obedient to that. I believe to be made well, it's a customized course or treatment plan, literally, completely designed on God's terms, crafted both through His Word and personal circumstances to bring healing to each individual's specific infirmities. In John 5:8, He tells a man to take up your bed. Well, if He was talking to the blind man, He wouldn't tell him to take up his bed. He'd tell him something else. It's a personal, customized plan that He lays out that we have to be ready to then be obedient to each individual's specific infirmities. And so we'll talk later about letting God use His Word and His eternal principles to develop that treatment plan. I'll give you the illustration. Again, when I was $100,000 in debt, my sister came up and goes, you're just financially hemorrhaging, is what she said. My finances were a complete mess. I had no idea of what to do. And God gave me a specific plan. By the way, in all four areas that I've had victory over, these big infirmities, not once did I seek professional help. Did I go read a book about it? Did I get together with a professional? I got together with God alone on His terms, and He worked these things out. I exhort each one of us to do the same. And so we'll talk later about using His Word and His eternal principles. We're going to see that in when we see Jesus said. But I just want to give a little illustration here, an experience of my own in this area of procrastination in the last three weeks. How God uses circumstances also. He uses His Word and His principles, but He also uses circumstances and people in His treatment course, both customized and compassionate. And you men might not like this, and I might get in trouble. But many times, His voice, the word that He uses, comes through your wife. All right? Believe it or not, it comes through your wife. When He made her a helper to you, He didn't make her just to make your meals and go fetch the screwdriver when I'm working on something. He's given you to her, to you, to help form you and make you into the image of God. So, your wife, your people around you, the circumstances are many times God uses to lay out the plan. Both customized and compassionate, by the way. Customized and compassionate. The last 3 weeks, or probably 4 weeks or 5 weeks now, I've been working on this area of procrastination. So I'm just going to give an example of how it works. By the way, Pastor, I love your book on deep discipleship. I wish he would have used some specific examples, not to copy them, but to at least sort of know how it works out. But very interesting book. But I'm just going to throw some things out. I remember the first Saturday after I started this series, I told my wife that on Saturday we're going to clean out the garage, and this was a mess. I literally had a boatload. I had my boat in there, and it was just filled with stuff and styrofoam, and it was a mess, and the whole garage was a chaos. It was going to be a big job, and I hate doing that kind of stuff. And so that Saturday came, and I started off with sort of my old scheming. I started off going, you know, I'll do some weed whipping, you know, because I sort of like to weed whip. It's sort of fun. And I'll do this and I'll do that. Anything to to not have to do this big project of the garage. And so I started wee-whipping and doing this and doing that, and I started all these excuses. And all of a sudden, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I remember telling her, you know, it's really getting too late to do that garage. And I saw the disappointment on her face, because I knew she really wanted to get that garage cleaned. And all of a sudden, this came just storming back. God says, no, that disappointment on your face is the course I'm setting before you. Be obedient to it. And so I go, let's just do it. And it was sort of fun. Like 3 hours in there, we had stuff all over. I was putting stuff up and around. And me and Mark were sitting there talking a little bit, but doing some long-range plans. And Dorothy's going, come on, come on, come on. We got to get going. We got to get moving. And we did it. By 5 o'clock, it was done. And it was just a really wonderful feeling. And not only that, but that place is so it's organized now. When I go in there, I know where all my boxes are. Everything is just wonderful. And so I started learning, okay, listen once in a while to your wife. And then I had in that garage like 4 things that had been there for a year that I should sell. I had inflatable kayaks I needed to sell. I had a lapidary rock saw that was all dirty I needed to sell. I had this vacuum shop vacuum cleaner thing I needed to sell. And I just kept putting them off. Most of them were underneath the boat, you know, I mean, out of sight, underneath the boat. Dorothy goes, why don't you just hire Elliot to bring that stuff out and figure out, I couldn't get it in the bag, and just figure out how to do it and just pay him to do it. And she said, by the way, I would sort of like my patio back because I had stuff all over the patio. I had knee boards and I had big bike racks or I had complicated systems of attaching I didn't want to deal with. She goes, I would really like that. You know, she wasn't nagging. She just said, yeah, it'd be nice to have my patio back. And so I listened to her. It was the voice of God. I mean, really. And I listened to her. The next morning, Monday morning, I go, hey, Elliot, I got this and this and this. That kid went in there and he took that out. He did a fabulous job. He did a good job, didn't he, Grace? I mean, he laid out the tarp so it wouldn't get dirty and he pumped them up and we figured out how to do it. And once they're pumped up, I took quick pictures of it. And he got those big kayaks back in this little bag. I have no idea how he did it. But he goes, yeah, Grandpa, I got her done. Got her done. And I was excited. And he got all the other stuff done, and I put them on, and then I got all the stuff off the patio. I put that stuff on. Now the divine power starts working. First of all, it was exciting. And second of all, this stuff starts selling like crazy. Now, I'm not so interested in the blessing itself as to watch God work. I mean, I'll let you on a little secret. God is awesome. He is. He is. That stuff just sold, and most of it was selling for way over normally what I'd get it. I could hardly keep up with it. And then other people, I remember Mark came home, and he's a very gracious person, and I had promised for 2 years I'd put tires on this trailer. It was sort of a joint trailer. And I kept putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. And he came home one day, and he was up at Cartful picking up some furniture. And he just said, oh, by the way, Kevin Mullen is wondering, when are you going to get new tires on that trailer? They were so bad that he couldn't stand it anymore. Kevin Mullen couldn't stand it anymore. He goes, tell him to get some tires on the trailer. And so when Mark told me, you know, I did my normal thing. I looked at him and go, yeah, they got another 10 years on this one and 20 years on this one, you know. But the next Monday, I go, you know what? That's the voice of God. And so the next Monday, I couldn't afford it this month in my budget because we had some other big expenses, Medicare expense, all this kind of stuff. But I go, no. You told me to get the trailers. I said I'd do it. So Monday morning, I brought it up to Fist Tire. We got new tires on that trailer, brought it home. All of a sudden, again, sales starts going through the roof. I was almost going, Uncle God, I don't have time to deliver another thing. But he not only paid for the $200 for the tire, but like 3 times above that, he did. It was time and time and time again like that. One thing after another. And it's amazing. Oh, I remember John Stewart. He brought some. John Stewart told me. I hate going. I'm not a guy that likes to research cars and all this stuff. I hate going down to the cities. So anyways, John Stewart once told me before, if you ever need a car, go to Nelson's up in North Branch. And so one day, I've had these cars forever, and that's a whole different story. It's a 15-minute tutorial with Jolene to tell her how to drive this thing, because there's so many things wrong with this car. But anyways, so one day I decided I'm going to just stop. I'm going to quit procrastinating. I just stopped at Nelson's. And they didn't come out and bother me at all or anything. And God gave me the most wonderful van. It only had 70,000 miles on it from Arizona for $3,000 less than my budget. I brought it up to Chuck here to get a hitch put on it. And Chuck was so frustrated because when he put the hitch on, he was going to go, I got to find something off this van. He couldn't find, other than a little bit of wear on the rear discs, he couldn't find a thing wrong with that van. And so, I mean, again, it isn't the van, it's to see God working. And he also uses compassion. I remember another Saturday, I got about 3 minutes, another Saturday, Dorothy said, you know, there's something wrong on the door here and all this molding that you'd put up is starting to fall down. You know, just, she wasn't nagging at all, she was just stating facts. And I knew I had to put the Toyota up for sale. And I hate doing that, and I hate people coming to my house and all that stuff. But I just did it. I just did it all. Passive obedience. And it was amazing. We were going to go to Marlene's house for a birthday party at 5 o'clock, and it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had everything done. And I was going, I felt like guilty. I felt like if it was my own plan, I'd get in there, and I got to do this. All of a sudden, she comes in. She had taken a little swim in the pool. I hadn't gone swimming in the pool all year. And she just looks at me. She goes, you should go swimming. And I sort of felt naughty, like I should really be working more. I mean, this procrastination, that was my own plan. I go, no, I'm going to go swimming. And I went swimming, and it was so nice. First time I went swimming all year. And it was just relaxing, and it just sort of took the stress out of the day. And see, God is both, when he customizes things, he's also compassionate. And I could give you lots more stories, lots more. But anyways, gives you the point of how we, even through circumstances and people, we go through his plan. And then it says to be made well, and we don't have time to go through a lot of things I wanted, but to be made well means sound and whole. We have to be also willing to let God fully open us and expose all the spiritual cancer in that area present. We have to be willing to be opened up to him and have him expose all that spiritual cancer that's present. And God's healing, I found, is always complete. It's never temporary, or it's never half-baked, half-done. It's complete. And I don't have time to finish the testimony of the healing of that financial infirmity that I had before, but he completely, completely healed me of it. And I thank him for that. And so if we're just going to remember one thing, passive obedience, to be made well, is to be, it's completely on the terms and plans of someone else. Let him lay out the plan before you. Don't try to run ahead of him, and then obedient to it, and all of a sudden you see the power of God in your life just working, just exploding through your life, and all of a sudden a whole new world opens up. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we do thank you. We thank you for this question. We thank you for your having the grace to even ask us this question. And we just pray, Father, that we might let you set the course before us. And Father, that we might then run that course according to your rules and according to your terms and see your work and see you work wonderfully. We do it in many areas of life. Why don't we do it in the spiritual area? We need to, and we just thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen.